But I think your background probably does bring a really unique insight into running a construction business. What's it done for you on a kind of high level? How does it make you look at things differently or do things better?
I would say it's probably because I was working in the commercial world rather than maybe just being a quantity surveyor. It shows people that we're more than just, your Joe Bloggs builder, so to speak. We're providing a service. Obviously, you start building a good relationship based on what they see.
So, welcome to the blue. Welcome to the podcast, everyone. On today's episode, we'll be featuring Thomas Waldridge, co-founder of Venta Construction. He's got a background in quantity surveyor surveying. Thomas, I think, brings a unique perspective compared to a lot of the guys that we speak to because of this. He successfully transitioned from the commercial projects to the domestic market. His expertise in running operations efficiently, and he's got a high level of professionalism with regards to communications with the clients, which we think is really going to help the young construction owners think about how to run their business well and scale properly. So, really looking forward to this conversation. Anything I missed there, Thomas?
Yeah, thank you very much for the introduction. Very nice.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Nice to see you.
So, I'd like to kind of just get straight into because, we have a lot of guys, even our clients, they tend to butt heads with QSs. But I think your background probably does bring a really unique insight into running a construction business. What's it done for you on a kind of high level? How does it make you look at things differently or do things better?
I would say it's probably because I was working in the commercial world rather than maybe just being a quantity surveyor. And it's a bit of a standard, I would say, within the commercial world for providing quite simple things like, a detailed quotation, valuations, site reports, which is just the norm in the commercial world. But implementing them in the domestic construction just helps so much. It shows people that we're more than just, Joe Bloggs builder, so to speak. We're providing a service. Obviously, you start building a good relationship based on what they see. And then, obviously, should we go ahead and do the actual works, then they have a lot more trust going into the project from the beginning rather than, sort of sucking and seeing what the build is going to be like once they turn up kind of attitude.
Yeah, so you must have seen a variety of the way people work. You have this kind of very detailed quoting reporting process, which I believe as a client, I would really appreciate that. Can you walk us through what you do that's different or that extra step that you go to with regards to that reporting and that process?
Yeah, so it starts from the moment we begin tendering or, providing a quotation. We pride ourselves on providing as much detail as we can from the beginning. So that starts with our quotations and our quotation breakdowns. And for us to provide those, we expect a certain amount from our clients or potential clients as well too. So that starts with we want, proper planning drawings done and approved, building regulation drawings or construction drawings, and then also structural engineers' works and calculations being undertaken. So then that gives us enough information for us to then go away and do our quotations and the breakdown of all of that to give our clients then as much cost certainty upfront at that stage, at that moment in time. And then following that, then should we be chosen to do the works, we then provide valuations every 2 weeks on the project, which, you know, give an update of, so when we're applying for our monies due for the works undertaken by us, is kept on top of, rather than, you know, from my past experience, when I've had builders doing works for myself before starting this construction business, you know, just asking for lumps of money as the project is rolling on just seems so unprofessional. You don't know really what you're handing that money over for. You can't, especially if you haven't had like a proper breakdown in terms of a quotation, you could be handing over money for something which isn't worth anywhere near of some of the, you know, some of the works which don't equate or total to the amount of, or anywhere near the amount they're asking for. And you've got no way of really breaking that down or knowing as well. So that's why we go to the depth of detail that we do from the beginning.
And with regard to sort of the client knowing, because I think that's a really good point. It's something that frustrates a lot of clients, that, and there's that disconnect between the builder sort of thinking, no, I've done this work and, you know, this is how much you owe me. But then the client kind of feeling a bit in the dark. How do you address that to make sure that there's no question of what you've done? Because obviously you've got the detailed quotes and all that, but then there's got to be, I guess, this communication aspect with the clients to keep them abreast of what you're doing.
Yeah, of course. So we have a weekly meeting with them. You know, we demand that rather than them demand it from us. We want that weekly meeting with them, just so we can communicate where we are on the project. Letting them know that if we come across any unforeseen works, or if the client wants us to do anything additional. And then following that, then every 2 weeks they'll get a proper valuation from us, which will have basically a subsection summary page from our quotation breakdown, where it'll have groundworks, you know, properly broken down into different types of work on the project. So groundworks, brickwork, electrics, plumbing, you know, all the different types of finishes you can have. And then we'll, as part of our valuation and claiming the money due at that moment in time to us, we put percentages completed. So for example, brickwork, if we, you know, get to that Friday every 2 weeks and we can see that we've roughly done 50% of the brickwork, we'll claim for that 50%. It's very easy for our clients then to go, right, let's have a look what they're claiming for. Yeah, it looks like they've roughly done 50% of the brickwork. But following on from my comment regarding any unforeseen works or any additional work, there's then another page which is attached to this evaluation for any unforeseen work. So we're really open. We basically summarize all of our man hours involved, obviously all the materials, and put a 15% on top. So we're very... And, you know, if they ever wanted to see proof of how we've got to those figures, we've got it all in hand because we record all man hours involved. And obviously we have the receipts then for any materials and plant as well.
I see. So that's great, because that's often, you know, something people struggle with, managing the variations and the extras that sort of pop up as they're doing the, doing the works. And this, so for example, with anything that comes up unexpectedly, I'm assuming you've got to get that estimated as quickly as possible. Is that something you, because I know you have this good relationship with your estimator, something that a lot of guys are really looking for, that estimator that they gel with, that works the way they want them to work and things like that. What advice would you give, and could you tell us about how you've developed that relationship, how that started, and you know, just generally give people hope that is possible.
Yeah, it's not easy, but it is doable at the same time, obviously. So I guess we were roughly like 2 years into the business being established, and we had quite a lot of tenders coming in, and where we were with the rest of the business, I wasn't in a position then to just give my 100% to every tender that we were doing. As again, just following on from the amount of detail that we go to, Like some, I know some construction companies or builders will like price per square meter. It just doesn't work for us, especially when you're adding new to existing, you know, for example, like alterations and demolition. You can never allow for that within a square meter of a new property efficiently, a new part of the property efficiently. So it got to the stage of, right, so we've got to think about how we're going to either bring someone in or use an online pricing platform, which is what how we started. It was okay, using the online pricing tools, but again, they would always price actual building side of things and never do any like the outside groundworks or any work which was involved in terms of external work. So it was very, you know, I had to go through a lot to see what they had and what they hadn't included, and then also add type myself in for doing any of the other parts of the project that hadn't been priced. So it, you know, we did that for about 6 months, and following that, then we thought, right, we need to have, you know, just someone we could speak to, just someone we could, you know, either go and meet or speak to like this, over Skype or Teams, and just go through how they put together, you know, the tender for us. So that was when we started, you know, Googling. And we came across a few different estimators then, and obviously speaking to architects that we were involved with at the time to see if they knew of anyone. And, you know, we basically went through a lot of trial and error. You know, we came across one other, an estimator where he was pretty good for 3 to 6 months, but then, you know, that fizzled out because he was, you know, he was dropping a few errors here and there. And, you know, when as our company was getting bigger, as your building company gets bigger, I guess the errors and the cost of those errors can get bigger as well. And that's what we were finding. You know, no one's perfect. We know that. But we thought, right, we've got to find someone else now. And which is when we came across Ethan, who's been working with us now for about 2.5-3 years. And he's amazing, to be honest with you. He does all of the tender side of things even better than I could ever do it. He put his attention to detail, his commitment to it all is incredible. And he has been one of the reasons why we've been able to grow our business now, because it's then released me to be able to go and do what I'm really good at, is going and meeting people, having that communication with people up front. And then Ethan then does all the pricing in the background, you know, as part of the business.
Yeah, that's brilliant, because, you know, we can always have the most efficient, streamlined systems, but if we don't have the people, you know, it comes down to the people using it and things like that. Because it sounds to me you've got a really good system in place that mitigates against a lot of issues with the in-depth costing and all that sort of stuff. The weekly meetings with the clients. But if the estimating from the beginning isn't correct or there are errors there, I guess it's going to play out later on and cause issues if you don't pick it up early. And if you do pick it up early, then that's your time away from the things that you're best at, which, you know, sounds to me like face-to-face selling with the clients, which, you know, we always encourage people to push what they're really good at and try to kind of outsource, delegate the things that maybe they know someone else can do.
And we still work together with now. I mean, even now we're still tweaking things all the time, where, you know, I think we need to maybe, so if I see an opportunity for us, which I think we should like be kind of, when I think maybe we to reduce the risk for us, I'll then sit down with Ethan and say, right, we need to make a note of this now. Or maybe, for example, we used to just say, right, we've allowed for latex in the floor where new it meets existing. Now that could be 5 mil, that could be 25, 30 mil. So now we even go to the depth of saying we've only allowed 4-5 mil coverage. And those little things which we'll just add in and keep adding in. And then where we've got to right now is, you know, we're pretty risk-free. And But then that also benefits the client because we at least we can provide them detail to say, right, this is what we've allowed for. Now, if anything changes, we'll be open and honest with you. But we can't foresee, for example, in that case where your existing floor is 30 mil out in that corner over there. We can't, you know, we can't go to that. We can't know that right now. But at least you know we've allowed for 5 mil all over. And then if we have to have a conversation further down the road, say, well, we need to put a little bit more over there, or the whole thing needs to change, then at least we've got a basis to go from where we say, right, we've allowed for this, but it needs to be this instead.
Yeah. And that is because you've stuck with like the same system and kept trying to improve it with Ethan there as the estimator, and you can kind of improve it with him, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you keep changing and going from one person to another, it becomes difficult. And I guess it's probably speaks to his attitude as well, because there are definitely some people we've worked with that we've come across, and you know, a business partner in his construction company, they're very rigid in what they do, and they go, mm-hmm. no, this is how I do it, and that's it, and they don't want to flex at all. So you talked about, you know, that's all.
We have met those estimators. We've parted with previous estimators as well, because they're very stuck in their ways. Especially you get something like the old school estimator, which they were kind of the ones that they were available to us at the time, because they may be semi-retired, just looking for an extra bit of cash for the weekends or for their holidays per year. But you know, stuck in their ways and not really wanting to change their way of the price in the project, basically.
What would you say to maybe like the guys just starting or thinking about this? Like, I really want to get a good estimator. How would you say they go about it in terms of, first of all, should they just expect, right, you're going to go through a few people till you mm-hmm. find the one that, you know, fits with you? And how much should they already have their systems in place and really be clear on what they want and how the process is going to be before they go looking for someone?
Yeah. So we came across Ethan through an architect. Now, I'd like to think that someone professional is going to know someone else professional. Definitely don't go down the route of using someone who's got a full-time job for another, like a contractor, because they can't give it the time and effort that it takes. You know, they're doing it in the evening, they're doing it on the weekends. And if you've got an estimator who's literally pricing for their day-to-day job, then they're going to be able to put more effort and time into doing it, and, you know, at the end of the day, putting it together better tender for you, rather than just something which they put in together in their own, you know, their own time as such. Also to be mindful of is domestic estimating is a lot different to commercial estimating. So that's another something we learned, was where someone who's pricing day in, day out for commercial works, those rates are completely different to domestic rates. You know, say for example, you're building block work and you've got 100 square meters, that rate is going to be less than if you've got to go and block up a window. You know, by the time you set up, you know, they'll get that bricklayer there, get everything set up to block that window up. You know, the rate is never going to cover, you know, a rate of 100 square meters is never going to cover the rate of, you know, 2 square meters. So it's having that knowledge as well. You know, another lesson we've learned as Advancer.
Yeah. Just, you know, we're talking about, you know, your estimate sounds great and the relationship you've built with him. That's kind of one side. And you are, you know, from speaking to you before, you definitely pride yourself on the professionalism and just raising that standard of a construction company when you're working in someone's home, how do you ensure that your trades are the same? What do you do to make sure that they've got the right mindset, the right ethics, work standards, things like that?
Yeah, so, you know, we tell everyone from the beginning who starts with, you know, you come in as a trial to see if you fit in with our team. And when they join us, we let them know exactly what we expect from them. We, you know, times we start, everyone has a break at the same time and everyone finishes at the same time. We let them know that when, you know, our work is in everyone's home. So we need to have, you know, the respect for people and our clients that, yeah, we're working in their home, and also that we are so fortunate to be given the type of works that we have been given, because we are very fortunate. It's like Instagram worthy works that we're doing at the moment, and let them know that. We don't allow any swearing on our projects. The other thing we always do with our team is we try to disconnect our team as well from the clients as much as possible. So, you know, we eat in the cabin. If any of them want to smoke or have a coffee break, whatever, it's all done in the cabin and around by the cabin, rather than just being all over our project and property grounds of our clients. And then obviously the workmanship has got to be spot on. If it ain't perfect, it gets, you know, we've got to replace it basically. So once, you know, sections of work have been done, we go around making sure everything's okay, because we don't want someone else then trying to correct someone else's work, which isn't good enough for the following trade, basically.
I see. Yeah, that, I remember just speaking to JP when he had his construction business. One of the very simple things was cigarette butts. Mm-hmm. Just not allowing the workers to smoke any near the house. It had to be kind of outside, away from the house, and they had to clear up any cigarette butts and things like that. And clients often commented on how clean the site was, that you know, they didn't expect it to be like that. So I think those little things do go a long way.
Just to jump onto that, that's always reassuring for us as well, is when our clients notice like how good our team are. It happened yesterday. We handed over a project yesterday in Penarth, and a client there commented on just how well mannered all of our team were. You know, they're always happy to help. When you hear nice things, we know then it's not just a front for us. It's, you know, because we can't be around them and watching them all the time, because obviously we've got other things that we're doing within the business. But then when the clients are noticing, you know, every day they're there usually, it's great to hear then.
Yeah, it is. And as you said, you know, you're going into someone's home, you're doing work for someone in their home. It's a very kind of sacred place for a lot of people to have strangers walking around and things like that, which I think, you know, the professionalism that you strive for, I think is lost on a lot of people, unfortunately. I think they do think, well, I do a good job. I'm really good at this. We build, you know, to an exceptional standard. And they may do that, they may not. But they think that that's the only thing that matters. And I think it's an important point to drive that home, that, there's more to it than just the building side. And sort of another thing I think that is overlooked, which, you know, with your systems in place, this shouldn't be a problem. And from your background, I'm assuming, you know, you've got your finger on the pulse of the finances, which is a place where people trip up a lot. I think if you're not costing things correctly, and then if you're not allocating expenses correctly, then you can't really know where you're at with a lot of these things, which I think plays into why that situation you talked about of just randomly getting asked for lumps of money periodically through a build. What do you think are the best practices, and what advice would you give to anyone looking to kind of set up their business in a way that they can track finances and they can be, you know, on top of that?
Yeah, so I'd say it is by doing a consistent, you know, every other week valuation, just to stay on top of the project. It's only to the benefit of the builder, the small construction company, because there's so, like, especially in domestic, there's so much work that's done which is unforeseen, which can be missed out on, and you know, if the work's been done, you're due to have to be paid for that work, that additional work that's had to be done. But staying on top of it is another thing. So if you know, by doing the valuation every 2 weeks, it prompts you to stay on top of it, rather than getting to the end of the project and going, right, has there been any additional work? Right, let's try and put a value to that now. Very difficult thing to do, you know, at the back end of a project. But then also they've got to put that over to their clients then to say, oh, by the way, we've done this, this, and this, and that's going to cost you that amount more. So, you know, that's a shock then to the client, isn't it? Knowing they've got to pay an additional amount of money, where they'll probably make a note saying, "Oh, why haven't you said anything about that previous to now?" kind of thing. You know, obviously that can lead to there being issues with how is that going to be funded, etc., etc.
And the 2 week period, is it a 2 week period that you do the evaluations? Is there a reason you do every 2 weeks? Did that come about? Was that something that you set from the beginning, or was it something that originally you did it monthly? How did that come about?
To be honest with you, in the beginning, it was for cash flow reasons. We were very fortunate to be given some big projects to begin the business, and they came with a need for a good cash flow, basically. So that was how we started every. But to be honest with you, I guess it organically then progressed into, oh, well, this is a great way for us to stay on top of knowing where the costs of the project are going to be, keeping the client informed of any additional work. Also on our front page, we're continuously forecasting the final account. So we'll have our contracted works, any additional works, and it's all being brought forward to a summary page, basically saying, right, we think you're final account, final figure is going to be this figure, and that continuously gets updated every 2 weeks. Then, you know, again, it just comes down to being well communicated with them, and they know exactly where they are.
So, I think there's a lot there, and obviously, I do feel like you've almost had a head start because of your experience in commercial and things like that. For anyone that's thinking this is quite daunting and I just don't have the time because I have to do everything, you know, a lot of the guys that we speak to, they started on the tools and then, you know, they've slowly worked their way up, and now they're sort of the owner, but they also have to go on site. They've also got to do all the admin, things like that. What would you say, where would you say they should start? Would it be the communication with the client? Would it be the, you know, the really detailed costings, things like that? Or would it be looking for an estimator that, you know, is really hot? Yeah. What would you say?
It's got to come down to, you can't do everything, can you? So for me and for us, I should say, as obviously, I had my background, which helped us put together, I guess, the like our spreadsheets But then if someone hasn't got that background, then they might be better off maybe jumping that stage where we were at the start of our business and going straight to an estimator who will be able to set up their quotations in a more professional manner, whereby then they can take that quotation and put it into a valuation sheet where they basically, going back to the subsections of the work, and they could literally, go onto Excel on, every other Friday onto the Excel formula and just add a percentage completed to each one of those different subsections of the work, followed by then that variation sheet saying, right, we've done this, it's taken us this long, and as the project is progressing, when they know they're doing a variation, just keeping an eye on, the man hours involved. Everyone's got receipts for the materials, just collating it and putting that together and stay on top of it that way, because guaranteed that half of any variation work done when you're thinking at the end of the project, right, what have we done? You'll just forget about it. It'll just be forgotten about. Yeah. And that's lost money to the to the construction company then, isn't it? Money which is due to them because they've done that additional work.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very common story, really. And then sort of not having the paper trail or the evidence, I think it can cause even just a lack of confidence in bringing it to the client, because they don't have the log of it. So they go, oh, you kind of owe us this much for variations. And it's just the client feels like, are you just pulling this out of your ass? Where have you got this number from? So I think that's a really good point. We say this as well. You can just start with an Excel spreadsheet. Just start there. And it's so much easier for us when we work with a client when they've got the spreadsheets and they're like, I kind of have these systems, but they're kind of all over the place. And you can start to see, oh, right, okay, so you are actually tracking these things. And it is, there's some method to this madness, as opposed to kind of, nothing and kind of just winging it sort of thing.
Just with the recording of the hours and stuff, then it's like you touched on at the end of the project, saying, how long did that roughly sit, take us to do? You can't, put your hand in your heart and say, yeah, that definitely took 8 hours to do that. But if you're recording the hours as you're going along, even if you've got to, revisit it a month later, but at least you've got those hours recorded and you can put them down in that, in that sheet and say, that took us 8 hours, or that took us 6 hours. I know it did. Look, I've got this down in my, it could be just down in a little diary that someone's carrying around with at the start of the project. Where we are now, we have a variation tab that we use within our business, where David, the other director, or Jamie, one of the project managers with us, they go in and they add the hours to this variation sheet that we've continuously got going for each one of our projects. So then I can go in and take those hours out and I can get the materials off them or off our, off our bank balance or off the accounts and that we've got at the different suppliers and collate it that way. But to begin with, it could literally just work by jotting down it, times in a, a small A1 or A2, no, bigger than that, A5 or A6 like diary where they're just, recording it down. Staying on top of it that way, and then you could say, look, I've got this detail down, it's in my diary here, if it ever gets questioned, then rather than going, oh, it kind of took us 8 but it might have taken 6, but we'll just put a full day in for it, you can't really truthfully say to your client then, yeah, it definitely took us that time, because you don't really know. So
maybe this wasn't a issue for you. But in terms of recording all of the data on site, because we think, that's often something that takes a bit of work to train the people on site to record the data correctly, especially if you're thinking, oh, this system worked great if this was logged, this was logged, this was logged. But then the guy, and to be fair to the guys on site, you know, they're on the move. They don't want to be getting their phone out if it's on their phone. They don't want to be, you know, stopping and tracking every single thing. How did you get to a stage where things were correctly being logged and it was enough stuff that you could do these fortnightly meetings and it meant, you know, it was meaningful?
Yeah, I guess, Dave and myself just sat down and put, one of the blessings of COVID was we had time, we shut the business for, I think it was like 9 weeks. But during that time, we put together some forms which we thought were going to be useful for us as the business was growing. That was one of them, where it's just very simple. It was, you know, sheet what the variation is going to be, and then we just start. It's not much in terms of like detail to the each subsection box. It's just like what was the variation and how long did it take us? What materials were involved? Yeah. And then I can go and you know, like you said, 5 lengths of, you know, whatever timber, 8. So that's the other thing we do as well. So to make it a little bit easier for us, we have a rate in our quotations for skilled tradesmen, semi-skilled, and then a labor force. So then Dave and Jamie, I don't know, whoever else is going to be growing with the business, and then say, right, we had 8 skilled man hours with 4 labor hours involved as well. And then I know that I can put, you know, the hourly rates to however many hours were completed, adding in the materials cost. And then I obviously put that into our evaluations then every 2 weeks.
Yeah, that having the simple input is often better than trying to overcomplicate it, because I think people get really excited about the possibility of, if they're tracking all of these million different things, but then it's just not realistic while you've got different projects going on. And that's a really good point as well.
That was something for myself to learn, definitely, because, you know, I love a spreadsheet, basically. But yeah, you know, I know the boys on site, they are so busy with everything else they're doing. You know, they're not going to have the same love for it as myself. So having just a simple, straightforward form where they just describe it, man hours, materials involved, maybe any plant, you know, any scaffold, for example. And then I can go, that's enough information for me then to go away and put a cost to it, basically.
That's great. I think there's been a lot here. I'm sure there's more we could talk about, and with JP as well. I'm sure he'd have lots more questions as well. We'd be happy to extend the conversation over another podcast. But for now, I'd like to hand it over to you to kind of just tell anyone listening about Venter, where they can find you. You mentioned Instagram. I think that's really, really important for any other construction business owners. You need to have a great Instagram. Yours is probably a great example. Can you give us some other places people can find you?
Yeah, so we have a website, which is www.venterconstruction.com. One of the great tool we have got on there, which people do love as well, we've got an estimating tool, which people can go on and kind of get an idea. You know, it's a very, very basic tool where people can put in their rough square meterage of the extension they want, and then it puts a price to it in terms of whether they want like bifolding doors or velluxes and, you know, the standard of the kitchen. So, you know, they kind of get a guideline for where, you know, what kind of cost their project will have. And then obviously following that, then that's a great lead for us.
Yeah.
Going back to Instagram, you know, it's social media taking over the world, isn't it? So it's so important to be showing off your works on there. It's something we want to concentrate on more, because I don't think we're, you know, truthfully, it's great for us to go, like, go and have a look at our portfolio on Instagram, but I think we could do a better job again. So that's something we're going to be concentrating on definitely next year. Yeah, it'll be next year, realistically.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Anywhere else people can find you if they're interested in getting in touch? Any potential clients might be interested as well. Just go on your. Would you say just go on your website, fill in your form, contact you through there.
Yeah, there's a contact number there. They can get it, but it's, you know, 02920233233, which, you know, that number comes straight through to my mobile, to be honest with you. So yeah, please give us a call. But and just touching base on for any other like small contractors, the biggest thing I would concentrate on is having open communication with any client. It's so important from the beginning. The communication that has been one of the drivers to our success is people being able to pick up the phone and us answering the phone, getting back to them, getting back to emails. We have WhatsApp groups for every project where it'll be myself, David, the other director, Jamie, our project manager, works with us, and then client, architect, all on one group. Anyone wants to fire a quick question rather than picking up the phone, because no, you know, you can't always answer the phone at the same time. But at least it's there, and when that person is free to respond, they can do so. So communication is key.
Excellent. Yeah, I agree. It's definitely a trait we see with the successful companies are the ones who have their client in mind, you know, they're at the forefront of what they do and communicating with them and making sure they feel that they're, you know, part of the project and they know exactly what's going on. So thank you very much for coming on, Thomas.
Thank you.
You're always welcome.
Thank you.